Alright, we're going to start. Welcome everybody. Thank you for showing up. And I'll just jump right into it. It shouldn't be too long of a meeting. We have a few brief discussions or a few topics to go over, so we'll try to push through them. I guess we'll start. If everybody has looked at the agenda, we can adopt the agenda.
Can I make two additions, please?
Sure.
Just one is the campus. Go back to that contract application, and we'll talk about that. And the other was years ago, I talked about solar farm, and you're doing stuff on the north side. And I just wanted to talk about orientation of new buildings so that there's a possibility of solar panels on any new building being put up.
So my, talk about that. My preference would be to put those on the next agenda in October. We wanted to keep this one because it's a special meeting. All we really have is the one topic to discuss and then the minutes from last time.
So time is an issue, is it?
But we could.
Doesn't take long to
get.
I got the original letters that you sent to Sean Ward.
Yeah.
And
it's just a matter of now you brought it up.
And it's important right now because, you know, you're working on new buildings, et cetera, and I'm just thinking that the roof should be
soft. Okay, I'll put them on the agenda for this one.
Okay.
So can pass and so
let him pass, just saying go.
Okay,
that's what we have before.
Okay, so adding those to the agenda, can we get someone to make the motion to adopt? And a seconder?
Sure.
Minutes from the last meeting. So I'm not sure if everybody has a chance to go through these, but if we can adopt the minutes from the last meeting.
I'll second.
Seconder? Sorry, I can't. So.
Brian.
Brian? Yes. So, third item on the agenda. Briefly, we have a new member at large that has been, so I'll just read it from regular council meeting, August 10th, 2022. That Phil Monroe be appointed to the Airport Users Committee as a member at large for a term of 2 years commencing October 2022. So you'll see Phil there, but Phil is not officially a member, so Phil won't be contributing this meeting. Yeah. Hi, Phil. Just don't say hi back. Business arising from the minutes. I know we have a few other things on there, new business from Airport Open House, vehicle parking, and there is quite an extensive list, and I will be addressing all of these at the next meeting, if that's okay, unless there's something pressing you'd like to discuss at this one. I'll take the silence as a no. And we'll move on to number five, new business. So what's happened, and I'll just give a bit of background here. So we're going to review the recommended changes to the Airport Establishment and Operation Bylaw number 4507, or 457.05, consolidated, and 457.12. So everybody's probably seen 457.12 recently because that's the rates bylaw, so that's the one that adjusts every 5 years what the lease rates are and user rates and a few of the other things. 457.05 was the original one from 1998. So if you haven't seen that one, it's really a consolidation of the original bylaw, the Airport Establishment Bylaw, and every couple of years there was a new one. So .06, .07, .08, and so on, and those adjusted rates every few years. So because it's about 25 years old now, and some of the terminology is incorrect and probably out of date and less than desirable, we are going to do a complete revision on the whole establishment bylaw. And some of the other things that are in there are the definition and interpretation. So as we go back and look at this, and this is really what this meeting is about for input, we are going to define the terms of what is a carrier, what is charter service, and along those lines, what the fees will be set. So there has been discussion around the Airport airport improvement fee for scheduled service, and that's one that's been in there a long time. But there's now discussion around charging a airport improvement fee for charter companies as well. So I am going to, and that's the gist of the main revisions in this bylaw. So it's updating of terms and updating of some of those rates for the airport improvement fee. So I am going to leave it at that, and I am going to open it up for discussion if anybody has any comments. Anybody? It'll be a short meeting.
There's one question on outside operator collection, because I think it's probably going to be done by goodwill to the operators at the airport, right?
Yes.
So would it be understanding that the outside operators using it would have to pay that fee also?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, there was some early discussion on this, and you know, and I don't want to take a defeatist attitude that we say, well, we won't be able to collect it, so what's the point of trying to implement it?
Yeah.
Our intent is to do our best to collect it from, you know, operators, whether they be at the airport or outside. And, you know, there are companies where we will see flights coming in or will review CCTV footage or things like that and happen to catch somebody coming in. Mm-hmm. And our intent is 100%. To try to track those down. How successful might be another story.
And no definition for flight school.
As far as charging like a user fee or
what's your definition of a charter flight? That's a good question.
A charter flight would be like a company, an airline company that came in, and I'll use an example. I think there's one out of the Sunshine Coast that has like a little Cessna 172 on floats where they pick up passengers and would take them out. But we wouldn't define a flight school as a charter company.
Okay. Even though they should provide commercial air service. Same thing with helicopter operators.
Matt, the license to be a flight school is different from the license to do charter operations. So, like for our flight school here, we don't have aircraft that are licensed under our charter operations. We don't do charters out of here.
Yeah, but there's other operators that do, right? So we're talking 703, 704, and 705 operations, right?
Yeah, so you have to be aware of what company is authorized to do those, right? Because not every flight school is authorized to do this.
So Phoenix flights would be something that would be within the flight school realm?
Yeah.
That would be taking passengers?
So as Arno mentioned at the beginning, the difficulty is identifying and then charging, billing. So if a 172, or 182, who knows type of aircraft lands, we have no way, nobody's out there, and we have no way of doing a check of every airplane that lands. If somebody happens to see it, like we had that Dash 8100 come in here, then we go check them up, but they could be corporate. Like Telescience, they're corporate. This is not what we're talking about here.
It's under the 406 regulation that you're allowed to do scenic flights.
Very Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Even the scenic.
So, I guess, I don't have so much as a comment. I have a clarification to make sure I understand things correctly. So, it's very clear in the bylaws that all scheduled air passenger service is required to pay the AIF. So that is unchanged. That goes for all scheduled service.
That is correct.
What this is trying to determine is that charter passenger service, or those that are chartering air service for charter, are also paying AIF. Is that, do I
That is the discussion. Now, this isn't for, like, what I would do in this, the purpose of this committee is to take those recommendations forward to council, mm-hmm. right? So if we are vehemently opposed to charter companies paying, and that's the sort of the decision of this committee, that recommendation would go to council as part of the report. So the discussion or, you know, there's always half a dozen options in any report that goes to council. The initial discussion would be the bylaw would be written such that scheduled service and charter companies would be charged the airport improvement fee as defined by the bylaw.
Okay. So schedule is already covered, the addition of charter and the definition of what that is.
Right, and a better definition of what schedule means. That would be the intent of the bylaw.
Yeah, because there's a lot of offers that come through that are not based there that don't contribute in a willing manner, per se, right?
Yes. I don't disagree. Our main goal is to tighten up what that looks like,
yeah, which is understandable.
So, I will put it out again if anybody else has any comments or questions.
Is there any thought given, Arnold, to just a flat charge rather than trying to chase two operators down? I mean, it's pretty tough when one individual company comes in and gets up two customers or two passengers a year and nobody sees that they're going to rise for free, but for the local, if it's more after the local operators or is it after everybody out there to a blanket over, or is there a possibility just for thought given to just a flat fee to operate off the airport, almost like a user tax, if you will, or a user fee for the operators that are based there, and then it's just set accordingly to us. What is there any way you're going to define that I did three scenic flights and four sharp flights in the last week sort of thing? You can't, you know, without keeping the very complex records and stuff, be able to pay on that type of thing. That's going to be virtually impossible. It sounds like it's getting way too complicated.
No, it's a good question, Brian, and I think we had dealt with this in a previous version of the bylaw. The intent was, and we have, let's say, reached out to some companies that if they are an off-site commercial operator, they would pay a monthly flat fee already or a yearly flat fee. This would be over and above that flat fee.
Is that written anywhere in the bylaws already? I've got it in front of me, and I'm a little confused on what this fee is that we're talking about, because the user fee is already in there for on-site commercial operators and off-site commercial operators at $300 or $400, or I guess now $310 or $410 a month. This is above that?
This would be the, I think it's defined in the old version as a passenger fee.
The head tax. Okay, the airport passenger user fee, I see, for the schedule.
Yeah.
Oh, so you want to be charging now a head tax to charter companies as well?
That is correct.
And then who counts the passengers? Yeah, that does sound like it gets really, really complicated.
Based on the bylaw, it is the responsibility of the operator to count passengers. Now, our earlier discussion was some of it seems to be the honor system, and it may be tough, but we don't want to discount the fact that it's happening just because we may not catch 100% of the people going through the airport. Does that clarify that at all, Brian, or?
I don't think it solves it, though, Arnold. I don't think you're, like, it's going to be extremely difficult to word it so that it fits for everybody. There's no question about that. Just the complexity of it, trying to keep track of it. I mean, years ago, we went down this road with an operator over there that was supposed to be paying head tax and never did. And, you know, there was quite a sum of money that wasn't transferred, if you will. They were charging for it and not paying it to the town. And, I mean, it just becomes almost a litigation to try to collect, you know, for 100 passengers or 300 passengers or 25 passengers or whatever the number may be. I mean, there's no
how do you even access their records to collect that money? And, you know, the whole just keeps getting deeper and deeper to me. If there was just, and I don't think there is any, I mean, we travel across, you know, fighting fires across North America, and we'll get a bill for landing fees at, you know, Flim Flon or the Paw or everywhere that we land at 3 months after we've been there, sort of thing. I don't know how they record it. Maybe it's worth an effort because those are all unmanned airports as well. A lot of them are, I should say. And how we get a landing fee from, you know, whether, I don't know if it's a recording system or what. And I got a landing fee 6 months after the fact that I've been in northern Saskatchewan town reviewing sort of thing. So I don't know how, if there's a system in place for that or what they're doing, but it might be worth doing some research on that to try to collect more of a landing fee type thing than trying to say, oh, well, you had 6 passengers on this time, you only had 4 on that time, or you know, just, I don't think you'd be able to collect it other than just a straight landing fee and some kind of proof of being up landing there.
I agree with that it would be probably better use of time to investigate how to get the off-site commercial user fee collected rather than trying to figure out how to word, how to count passengers. Because looking at the fees that are in here, at the moment it's $10 per passenger. Now the scheduled airlines that already operate here are paying this, and that's probably where the majority of the fees come, or the majority of money, because obviously the point of doing this is to increase the revenue at the airport. But as far as charters go, I don't know how many charters actually happen out of here on a yearly basis, but even if there is, let's say, 300 passengers being moved by charters, you're making $3,000 off of that. That money could probably be, money and time could be better spent in a more efficient and effective way to collect the user fees rather than passenger fees. Again, the intention, it seems, is to create more revenue out of the airport, and that makes sense, but the little revenue that comes from this, and it seems to be a pretty in-depth topic, could probably, the time could probably be better spent in a more effective area.
Who cares that the town doesn't do the work? Most of this will be on the honor system. And we know where that goes. And what Arnold's comment at the beginning is, we know we're not going to capture them all, but the regulation will be in place so we can capture some. The sites you mentioned, Brian, a lot of them have agreements with NAV Canada. So if there's an air radio station there, they'll get some deal from NAV Canada where NAV Canada will provide them registration of aircraft. That's all. They won't know how many people are on board. That's not just a fee, a landing fee. A lot of the casino right now, those guys, you know, have that here, of course.
Yeah, it just seems awful. I don't know. It seems awful difficult. You put it on, we make it into a bylaw, or it's made into a bylaw, rather, once it's cast in stone. And maybe that is the best way to go, Arnold, is to have it in stone, and if you get 30% of it, or 50% of it, or 10% of it, or 80% of it, you're that much, you know, at least you're 30% ahead, as opposed to getting nothing from it the week before.
What we're looking at now is you get a charter, you know, we have the Dash 8-100 comes in here, he lands, a bunch of passengers get out, and he has nothing to the airport, where the local skin guys, they carry the whole thing. And that's really what the intent is, that and the local charter guy.
Why is the user fee not being pursued then? There's a $410 per month user fee that he should be being charged, which I think is way more than you'll get from a head tax.
But it is being pursued. We're not saying we're throwing that out the window. That is still in play.
This is above and beyond.
Yes.
I appreciate your comment that the local operators are, you know, sharing that.
You're the guys who carry everything.
Yeah. Thank you for acknowledging that.
This is going to pick up the other operators on the airport who are not scheduled, who are really doing the same thing. except not going to YBR all the time. But, and that's an easy one, really. But this other one is capturing people that we don't know about. And they do come in here. Now they, Arnold, like that citation that's been coming in and out of here.
Yes.
He would be captured how for these guys' identification?
It's registered to a private company for us to say that they're flying. I mean, it's probably people from the company on the plane or family. So for us to say it's a charter, we first have to probably prove that he's doing charters or he has a license
okay.
for charters. And he might, we can contact him. He might just say, no, it's a private plane.
Yeah, and just like tell us. So one of the other options for everybody listening is to say a landing fee, as Brian mentioned, for aircraft over a gross weight. So your GA traffic gets a free ride, and that's kind of a given. But when you get into the citations and some of the larger airplanes, once again, we have to know they're here. But our staff who go out every morning, if the airplane's on the apron, the aircraft pays a parking fee, but he'd have to, we'd have to also look at if it's a heavier aircraft, like a Citation, they may be paying a landing fee. That might be worth looking into or incorporating into this. So there's more of the uses of the airport, heavier uses, if I can use that term, we'll start sharing the costs.
What about doing, like, for that size, with the officer's size, prior permission required, and if they don't go that way, then putting a fine in the bylaw?
I think the issue we had with prior permission required was, I don't think we couldn't differentiate between aircraft. It was either prior permission or no permission. So we'd have to have somebody at the airport, and anytime somebody requested landing, you'd have to get permission.
Yeah, but if you put it at a gross weight of the aircraft and do prior permission required for that, because I believe that's how Nanaimo is. They have a prior permission there for a certain size. And if you put a fine there and they don't report it, then you go after them with the fine and force them to be a little bit more honest. Because the prior permission, they're violating the cars to come in.
PPR, though, puts more work on airport staff. And PPR now is getting messy. You can't use their airport unless you ask with permission. I mean, it's a public airport. Anybody can land here. I know what you're maybe thinking with the helicopter training, that's unique, and that's for another reason. That's noise. And we don't, and Arnold doesn't deny them. It's more of a public affairs exercise so we can get it on the website so residents in the area know about it. So that's kind of another issue. But trying to go PPR for airplanes that could land here, a citation, or any of the other airplanes that weigh above 3,000-4,000 pounds. Messy.
Have a case of the young fellow from the university student who had a fairly large plane, and he was just dying out from Calgary because I think he is gifted the airplane from his parents or something, and that was kind of his way of traveling, and we would have thought it would be a charter plane, but it wasn't.
So with the PPR, I would agree with you on that, and I also think it's important for the airport here to be welcoming. I think we want for people to come, we want for people to use the airport. I think if I understand the problem we're trying to solve is to ensure that those that are using the airport are contributing to the costs associated with the airport.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're trying to accomplish.
Yes.
Right? So
simply, that's bottom line.
So I think staying focused on the problem that we're trying to solve for, which is those that are using the airport regularly it's in the bylaws, all scheduled service is paying that fee. And then those that are using the airport and, you know, chartering and need to be contributing. That's the problem, it seems to me, we're trying to solve. So I think the focus on solving that problem is important.
Yeah, we are going to have outliers. I think everybody here at this table and online agrees with that. There's going to be things that we miss, and unfortunately in our airport, not having air traffic control, not having a full-time ground operator, we're not going to cover everything. Our intent is to hopefully get somewhere in that 70 or 80% range and at least work on those numbers from there.
Has there ever been given any thought, Arnold, to doing what they do in Tofino now, where you have to contact four parties remote, I think it is, with Tofino, where there is nobody actually there, but you're talking to Hardy and they record everything? Is there a possibility of that type of a setup at Qualcomm, or is that above and beyond what's...
That's a New York Canada thing, Brian.
Yeah, but is it a possibility, or is that above the scope of what the airport is trying to do?
I don't think it's so much above the scope of the airport. It's Nav Canada's scope. They have hard numbers on when the airport obtains certain services. A certain level of service, they get a flight service station. When you get so many movements, they go to a tower. They used to have Tofino radio, and the people didn't meet the requirements, so they remoted it to Port Hardy.
Probably do get more traffic than Tofino does. Maybe smaller,
yeah.
But it gets pretty busy here sometimes.
Yeah.
I think you guys saw that Sunday where like the airport was overflowing with airplanes.
Yeah, relatively speaking, they get a lot more. They get a lot of heavies in there in the summer. And they've got Coastal with their beach 1900 doing a regular skit. And there may be some other reason, and I can't think of quickly why, they want to have some kind of air traffic control oversight in Tofino.
Yeah. Classification of airspace first.
Yeah, and then they have to reclassify our airspace to Delta. It wouldn't happen tomorrow. It would take a couple of years.
And just another question, Arnold. Has there been given any projections or thoughts on what the financial gain of this is going to produce versus the trouble to implement this and to go after it? Are we after 100,000 a year? Are we after 5,000 a year? Or what is the objective target? Or has it been given any thought process into that at all to make this a worthwhile exercise?
Quite honestly, Brian, I think the initial intent is to sort of establish those guidelines and put it in place. Quite honestly, we don't have any numbers on anything, any of this in the past. So to say we'll improve it by 50% or 15% is, I would merely be speculating. So, I think it was mentioned earlier, from our perspective, right now, anything is an improvement. But the numbers, if I had to guess the numbers, anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000 a year. Merely a guess.
Is that a worthwhile target number?
Remember, Brian, it's almost a zero-cost item for the town. This is just paper, a bylaw.
How is that zero cost if you have to have somebody who tracks down these people and sends them a bill? It says somebody review the footage. Like, if you're right that, it's based on the honor system, but the point is if we catch, you said earlier, 50% or 20% or 80%, it takes labor to do that.
I'll use an analogy here, Mike, and I mentioned that you said it before, but we don't catch everybody speeding on the highway. That doesn't mean you shouldn't patrol it or put some system in place to try to patrol it. And that's the best example I can give is I don't want to throw up my hands and say, we'll never catch anybody anyway, so we're just not going to put a bylaw in place. The intent here is put the infrastructure and the groundwork in place, and we can work on process afterwards.
Right. I agree with that. I think, but from the implementation originally of this bylaw, there's been the concern about how do we actually how do we actually track this? Are there cameras pointed towards the apron or towards the gate to see who's going in and out of there or the aircraft coming in? And who's responsible for tracking that? Because again, this goes back to several meetings to the original implementation of the bylaw where the user fees came about. And we said, okay, well, we're going to be charged equally. How is everybody else, or we're going to be charged for usage. How is everybody else going to be contributing so that the people who are stationed here are not fully responsible, as this whole discussion is about?
Right. And again, I don't disagree. And the intent is not to, you know, the bulk of it will be the people who are stationed here, as was mentioned earlier. But, you know, the intent here is to try to get contributions for people who are using the airport and aren't stationed here. And unless there's another way to do this outside of a bylaw, you know, we can definitely be put the focus towards that, but we can't have a collection system in place without a policy or bylaw from council to say this is what we're going to do.
And I'll just add that, you know, decades in this industry, almost all the people that are flying airplanes and certainly running air operations are compliant by nature and understand that there's a responsibility to contribute where we are making use of space. You know, if I land in, you know, Saskatoon somewhere and I've only been there once, they send me a bill, I'm going to pay my bill. Right? And I think most people in aviation, by nature, probably shouldn't be in aviation if they don't understand their responsibilities and live up to their responsibilities.
So, I'll put out there, if anyone else has anything else to add, do you feel we've discussed this one enough? And I'm just, again, I'm making a recommendation to council here as part of a report. This is, you know, this will come from the user committee. So, just so I'm clear, like the airport improvement fee itself for scheduled airlines is not going to change. But the real sort of addition that's outside of what we currently do is the airport improvement fee for charter companies. So I've heard sort of everybody say it's going to be difficult to collect. I completely understand that. I don't disagree at all. But my main question is this something you would be opposed to, or is this something in general that you would favor and we just have to work on the details?
Yeah, I agree. I think it should be in place, but we do have to work on the details of how it's going to be tracked and collected.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, there's got to be more input, more revenue generated. There's no question about that. Anyway, we can make that goal. I mean, I'm just being devil's advocate. Are we going to spend $5,000 to collect $2,000? And how it's going to all wash out at the end of the day. And that's my concern with it. But the town just absorbed that with town staff, administration staff anyway, as far as sending the bills and collecting that stuff. So it's just another layer on top of them to do more of that. It's, you know, there should be people that use the airport should be paying appropriately for the use of the facility out there. And that's the bottom line. And that's what it is. If that motivator and moving forward, then that's what we should do.
Yeah, and to your point, Brian, it is something we already do with tie downs. You know, we do keep track of the tie downs and we do send out bills. So it would be a similar situation. So we already have some of those mechanisms in place to send out those bills. So it would just be additional ones.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will move on then. And I guess, Paul, I will leave this to you to introduce these for the other.
I just want to ask if it's possible to apply for the CAD pass because he knows how to do it. That's all I'm asking.
You ready for my answer?
I know the answer, but it's probably best if everyone here hears it.
Yes, okay. There you go. That's one.
You got some.
Okay.
And I still want to put off the solar thing because I think it's important that, you know, you're going through the designs of hangars and whatnot right now, and I really think over the long period of time it's important that those roof lines should be on the south side, because one day he was putting solar panels on. Even if you hook them up to the lighting system at the airport, we're going to hook them up. Eventually, you're going to have power centers for electric planes that are coming in. I mean, all this is going to happen in the future, there's no question. And it would be nice producing our own electricity. We have that whole north side, which you're filling in right now. I know there's going to be probably hangars going in there, but, you know, I got electricity that I bought in 2 years ago, and you're probably here. And I had this development for a possible solar farm here, though. So the electricity is going to power up the electric vehicles for the town, for their power implements, et cetera, but also put into the grid for the airport. So that's where I'm at. So I'm mainly concerned with the buildings right now, and we'll talk more about it next time.
So just to clarify, no, I haven't actually seen...
Oh, I've got a coffee room. Yeah.
I would be interested to see it. It would have been a bit before my time, but it is...
It was nine to planning and some of the other
things.
Yeah.
It's new to me to hear this. I don't see why we wouldn't do something like that. Yeah.
It's just an obvious thing that's going to happen, so the town's going to address it.
It's a common thing in the DC building code that they're going to put conduits through housing for solar roofs as part of the standard code pretty quick.
And it's funny, it's an irony because, you know, I always complained that when Bob and I were talking about the two hangar building, and I wanted them orientated the other way, 90 degrees. Actually, in the long term, they're better off now because they're going to go away. Bob's listening to this, I think
it's over. That last part of the tea hanger, there's been all sorts of proposals for that, but my intent would not be to orient them the other way. My intent would be to split that in half and have some on the taxiway for OB and extend the taxiway in the back behind the tea hangers and then have them sort of back to back that way. I have not seen it, but I will look at it.
Thank you.
And if anybody has seen the soil out there, yes, that came from another town site, so I believe they are finished now. We'll go through and do another sweep of the area, make sure all of this material is there and that site is as full as it's going to be in the next 3 months. I won't make any guarantees beyond that.
Is there any move to clear up the kind of mess just before the gate? Excuse the expression, mess, but all that concrete and everything, are they going to be used in that area? You know, what's going to happen to it? Because, you know, we're all expected to have our sites very nice and clean, and yet the town is making a bit of a mess.
I'm trying not to throw anyone under the proverbial bus there. Until we can get cooperation from every department in the organization as to what happens at the airport, it will be a bit of a mess for a little while.
Okay.
I don't always seem to have control about what ends up at the airport.
This is one of the conversations gets up.
We sort of worked on the logs last year. My next plan is to work on the concrete pile.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I guess I will. I'll put it out now so there is a meeting on the 5th. If you want to contribute an item now, or there's something you'd like to discuss for the 5th, now please email it, and we'll put it on the agenda for the next meeting. I know it's short notice, and it's a meeting coming up right away, but. As you know, there's an election coming up in a few weeks, so this item needed to be on a special meeting before this council disappears, or part of this council disappears. So if you don't have anything today, or if you do have anything, let us know now, and if not, just please email it, and we'll look at the next meeting.
What is the latest update on the jet tank?
So we have, I think, cleared up all of the information we needed as far as the octopus that lives underneath the apron there, all the wiring, there was some question as to how the power even got out there. And then we looked at probably putting it where the avgas was, and I think we decided that wasn't necessarily a good idea. We didn't think we had enough room to put it in there. We have worked out now how we're going to put it by the windsock. And while we have Raylex there, we're going to probably redo some of the wiring. When we initially ordered the tank 4 or 5 weeks ago, they told us 12 to 16 weeks. We're hoping by the end of October. And the just an update to our ones here, the LED lighting project, as you're all aware, is happening. We had another meeting yesterday. Apparently it is going well. The night work is done for now. We have daytime work going on. They are working on taxiways, and they are progressing quite quickly. We heard something like mid-Thanksgiving weekend, I think, mid-October, for the lighting system being turned off, and we're hoping after that it will remain on, and there'll just be 1 or 2 days here and there where they'll have to turn it off early in the morning.
One of the things for pilots in the group, they are looking at disabling the taxi lights for daytime operations, excuse me, but leaving all the other airport lights available. Big one is Baffy. So if we get a rainy, crummy day and you want to turn the lights on so you don't run into a tree, they're trying to set that up. If they're unable to split the circuits, we still have a deal with them where somebody will make a call in the morning of a bad weather day and they will not turn the lights off. So there's not going to be a day where you're going to have to come into call or come during the day in less than ideal conditions and not have lights to guide you. So, but you could very well not have taxi lights, which won't be a big deal once you're on the ground. That'll all be NOTAM. Watch NOTAMs, please. NAVCAN is doing a heck of a job. They get a NOTAM out in less than 10 minutes from the time I call them. So the NOTAMs are really up to date. Tells you what's actually closed. We closed Delta this morning. Alpha still closed at the far end. That'll change. Next week it'll change to something else. They'll never trap the T-hangers. They've always left an opening there. But you may run into a situation where you've got to do a backtrack from Charlie or something if you're using 29.
Okay, I will leave it there if nobody else has anything. Motion to adjourn. And a seconder?
Second.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Adam.
So, do you remember the comments that Sean had? A couple of years ago, because I got all the emails. I got all the emails.